But first, no, I'm just kidding. So before I wrote Puppet, I was a sys admin for a long time, and fortunately I no longer am. But I wrote Puppet out of frustration because there's this repeating theme in the life of a sysadmin where you find yourself doing what is effectively the same thing, but is slightly different all around. The work that you do tends to follow patterns, but the patterns aren't exactly the same, so you can't just copy the script. So it ends up being very complicated to realize when things are the same versus... So this is a good example. You're installing, managing the same service on two platforms. They're almost exactly the same. All the words are almost exactly the same, but the commands are slightly different. And for some weird reason, every operating system seems to name services slightly different. Is it called SSH or SSHD or OpenSSH or OpenSSHD? So as I attempted to write tools to manage these things, my tools got more and more annoying and more sophisticated, but never quite did what I wanted. But then I also found that when I would write these scripts to do work for me, that they would leave out a lot of information. There'd be information that I knew was important. When I go and I edit the configuration file and then I start the service, I personally know that the service needs to be started before I edit after I edit the configuration file, and I have to install the package before I can start the service. But your scripts don't necessarily say that. So it's important to have to find this implicit information, to find the relationships between these things that I'm struggling, obviously. Your tools need to be able to express this information in an explicit way. Rather than having it be obvious, rather than you knowing it, your tools should know it too. So if we go back to these resources, so this is a case where we've got packages and services that are almost exactly the same, but not quite the same. This isn't the only example, though. There are actually a lot of cases in managing computers where the resources that we manage are very similar but not exactly the same across all the systems. We've got the same packages, we've got the users, we've got services, we've got, you know, these are six examples, but there are lots more. So what I wanted to do was try to find a way to manage these things consistently, to manage these resources in a way that I could talk about a resource at a high level and say, when I say the SSH package, just figure out what I mean and do the right thing on Debian or on Solaris or on OS 10 or on whatever. And that's essentially that's the main thing that Puppet's trying to do, and I think it does it pretty well. So this is kind of an experiment for me because I don't normally talk, well, I don't know, anyway. So the best analogy I can come up with in terms of why these resources aren't advanced is the move in the 70s from assembly code to essentially to high-level languages like C and other things like C. So if you wrote a program in assembly language, it wasn't just non-portable in the sense that the next version of that chip, you'd have to rewrite the program. You couldn't take that code and run it somewhere else. You had to just about rewrite it entirely. If you look at sysadmin code today, if you're a sysadmin, you're writing code, that code won't work on, if you write it for a Red Hat machine, it's not going to work on Debian. If you write it for a Debian machine, it's not going to work on OS 10. If you write it to work on a Red Hat and Debian, it's not going to work on Solaris. But even worse, if you write it to work in your environment, you take everything necessary to manage the services that you care about, and it works in your environment. That won't work in somebody else's environment, because you're going to have things like your IP addresses and your assumptions and your security model all encoded in that system. So what you have is an extremely non-portable system. All the code you write as a sysadmin, and all the code that you write as a developer, because we have a lot of people these days, Google employs a lot of developers to perform system functions. All that code is non-portable. If you talk to Google about why they don't release that code, if they're honest enough, they'll tell you, oh, we won't release it because we don't want anybody else to get advantage of it, but they'll also tell you that no one else could use it. It's not useful to anybody else because it includes too much of Google's own requirements, their own policies in it. So even if they did release it, it wouldn't be useful to anybody else. So my goal in writing Puppet was to find a way to produce truly portable system administration software. And I don't mean Puppet as the software. Puppet is a way to write software. Puppet has its own language. When you use Puppet to do things, you're writing code. I want that code that you write in Puppet to itself be portable. I want it to be possible to say, here's how you manage service X. Here's how you manage SSH. Here's how you manage Apache. Here's how you manage being an a client to authenticate against LDAP services across however many platforms you need to manage in one place and in a portable way, so you can then share that information not just across your own platforms, but across organizations, so that you can actually publish that and somebody else can use that. And every time I talk about this, especially if I'm talking to sales guys or executives, they all say, great, so you can fire sysadmins because we're going to get more work done. And if you look at this, do we have more programmers today or do we have fewer programmers today? The transition from assembly to high-level languages, it wasn't about, yes, we got a lot more done with less effort, but that didn't make it so there isn't a constant amount of effort involved. We're always having to do more things. If you look at what it takes to be a sysadmin, the requirements on us change all the time. If you look at what it takes to manage a computer, the requirements change constantly. We always have more things. We always have to do more. We have to accomplish more in less time. So what we need is a way to constantly increase the amount we get done without always coming home late. A friend of mine thinks the best way to sell Puppet is to say it always gets to the pub at 4 o'clock. I think 4 is a little bit late, in my opinion, but anyway. So with Puppet, I've created what I call a resource abstraction layer. And this is really the fundamental advance in Puppet. It's a way to talk about the fundamentally addressable entities on all the systems you manage. And sometimes it's a little bit of a stretch to model everything as a resource, but in general, almost everything you do on the computers you care about can be viewed as a resource. And it's interesting talking people through their first uses of Puppet, because it really does take some time everyone thinks of things procedurally. Well, I go on the system, I do this, 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 and then that, and it all works. Well, it works that time unless that's the case, or it's Monday, or it's the 29th of February, or so. When you model things as resources, then you're really asking yourself, what things do I care about? How do they relate to each other? And how are they grouped? Like I said, these are the whole point of that is abstraction, which means that I'm trying to build an abstract layer on the top that then can allow me to provide portability layers underneath. We call the portability layers providers. So for packages, we've got support for 23 different package types. It's kind of cheating to say that because we've got apt and aptitude, we've got yum and up-to-date and RPM. But if you're managing packages, it's really, really likely that Puppet can already manage those packages for you. And we also have, so the users, we can talk to pretty much anything you need to talk to in terms of users. And in terms of supported platforms, what I would consider to be a supported platform, if any of the resource types that come with Puppet don't work on any of these, seven or eight platforms, that's a bug. So this is already a very portable system. And most of the portability for these, I personally did the support for, I think, Debian, Red Hat, Solaris, and probably FreeBSD. And the community's come in and done the very small pieces necessary to run on these other platforms. And in most cases, it's 50 lines of code to make, to provide RUG support on whatever it's SUSE or whatever that's called on most platforms. It's very little code to do the extra bit of portability to provide this support for this platform. According to James, Puppet also runs on NetBSD and the other night. Yeah. So it's already a very portable system. And if you go to Puppet's, I've got a track site that's running a wiki. If you go to that wiki, you can download today a lot of code that you can use to, even if you can't use it to solve your problems, if it doesn't do exactly what you want, there's a lot of code that's a very good example that you can start with. And if you go back to when people first started writing portable code, it took a long time for developers to get from, I have portable code, to there are lots of solutions I can download. It took a very long time to get to the point where we had something like SourceForge that was just, apt-get install, solve my damn problems. But we're working on that. The nice thing about this portability layer is it's not just for centralized management. It's not just about using Puppet as an individual tool to do things. This API, this portability layer, is a real API into the system. If you want to write another application that just doesn't want to have to care about how RPM works or doesn't have, if I had to count all the programs that I've written that called uname to figure out what was going on and had a big case statement around that, I would probably be making more money than I am right now. So you can write different pieces, different applications that use the same API. There's actually you can start the agent on Puppet in Puppet separately, and use that use the same API over the network. So instead of being on the local host, you can actually have network-based access to these resources. You can contact the host and say, "Tell me about all the users you have on your system," or "Tell me about this specific user," or "Hey, delete the root user," or whatever it is you want to do. And that's to me that's really important that that abstraction layer is a real API on a system that can be used by anybody. If you look at any of the other tools out there, and I really do believe it's all of them, the thing that caused me to write Puppet is because I wanted this ability. I wanted this ability to just not have to worry about detail. And I went to all the other applications I could find. I went to CF Engine has been around for a long time. I was a consultant in CF Engine for a good long while. I worked at Blade Logic for 6 months, and I was really hoping that they were going to build this ability to talk about resources as an abstraction. And no one was doing this. Everyone was providing these great tools that had all these nice validation layers and were really like enterprising and great and expensive and slow, but they didn't have this kind of abstraction that I think is really important. So once you've got the abstraction layer, you want to be able to capture the rest of the things that matter. One of the things that drove me insane about CF Engine was you could get the relationships to work. You could have relationships in the applications, but you couldn't make them explicit. In one place, you would say, well, if this thing happens, then set this bit. And then somewhere else, you could say, well, if this bit is set, then behave in this way, then react in this way. But that's not explicit. That's not the same thing as saying, look, this depends on that, and if that changes, this should react. We've got a very simple way to talk about relationships in Puppet. You know, and I could not get the stupid thing. I thought this got fixed. It says before the file should obviously come after. I couldn't get the stupid slide to refresh. But the file should be installed after the package is installed. If you install the file and then the package, then the package overwrites the file. The service, obviously that's not always the case. But I can guarantee you that's the case for some people. The service should not get started until the package is installed. The service shouldn't get started until the file is in place. If the file changes, we want to restart the service. We all know that. When we think about managing services, we clearly realize these things are all the case. But if we aren't telling our computers that's the case, then they're not going to behave in a consistent and manageable way. And if any of you saw Lindsay Holmwood's talk on Puppet, and he gave a great talk on Tuesday about how to use Puppet to actually solve problems in a really fast, useful, and easy way, one of the things he said was he was quite shocked at how many little things they were doing that they didn't realize. When you're forced to go into your system and explain to Puppet what the hell you're doing to make these stupid computers behave correctly, there's actually a lot going on, a lot that people don't realize. I was just at a client site last week, and my lectures that I gave to them is what inspired me to attempt to talk more about resources in this talk than I normally do. But we had to go through this bootstrap phase, and then you go back and do everything automatically that you bootstrapped, and you realize that like there are 100 little things. And if you leave those little things as implicit, and you don't have it encoded in a repeatable, manageable way, then you're going to get in trouble someday. So Puppet does have a few other goals. SSH in a for loop is not a management solution. And even if you use cluster SSH or RDIST, it's still not a management solution. It's not enough to be able to go to all the computers and do a simple little thing. Can you share that solution? I did a poll, I think, last year about how many people write code to manage systems, and I think almost everyone raised their hand, and how many share those solutions, and nearly no one does. If you whatever you write with SSH in a for loop is very unlikely to be shareable. So I wanted to make a tool that didn't just have the abstraction, but that could actually be used to manage lots of machines at one time. And really what I want to be able to do is talk about, provide a single piece of code. I consider the application that you write in Puppet, you write a single application, and that application manages your entire network. It gets compiled at different phases. Each machine gets its own resources compiled at different times. Well, you've got a single application, and that application is your infrastructure, is every service on your network. And when you modify that application, you're modifying the code to Puppet. You're committing that to the version control. Puppet's pulling that code from version control and automatically deploying the resources across your network. One of the things that drove me nuts about CF Engine was it has two committers. The two committers are Mark Burgess and Root. And I expect those are actually the same person. It was very difficult to get him to accept any new ideas. By the way, if you guys have any questions, please ask me questions. It's easier to do this as a conversation rather than just a pure me dump information to you. So I'm happy to stop in the middle to answer questions. So just one second. Come on now. Mid-thought. So it's important that a tool like this not just do what I think is important. It has to be able to meet everybody else's idea of what a good application model is. If I don't agree with you guys, and you all agree with each other, then I'm wrong, even if I'm the one with commit access. So I think that's really critical. And Puppet so far has about 20 committers, 17 people have committed in the last year. James Turnbull has been doing a heck of a lot in the last couple of months, just published a book on Puppet, which is awesome. And I do everything I can to get people as involved as possible. Do you have a question?
Can you get back to the previous slide? I just quickly wanted to know, is this a push configuration?
This is pull.
Yeah. Okay. So that's,
yeah.
Thanks.
Every 30 minutes by default, every client on your Puppet network will pull from the server. You can adjust the time that it, the frequency that it pulls. It's possible to set it up for a push, but it would require a little bit of programming right now. But it's pull right now. So another thing that I think is actually really important about a tool like this is that I don't think the tool can afford to suck. And unfortunately, a lot of tools today do suck in relatively painful ways. When I was consulting in CF Engine, there were many cases where you couldn't expect it to compile on a given platform. And maybe every other release would compile, but not, you know, the even releases would have been not the odd releases. And I don't really think that's acceptable because I was going to customers and saying, look, you know, if you spend a ton of money, then I will make your life easier, except for on odd releases of the software. And if you look at the way the other tools are, CF Engine isn't really an exception. I've been going to meetings about, like, workshops on this concept, the topic of doing automation, for a long time, and almost everyone in the room is really focused on the theory. We've got to get the theory right. And then you say, well, I can't really use your software. And they go, yeah, but the theory's great. And I don't really think that's okay. So let's see how many slides I need to skip. So, like I said, resources are high-level abstractions. And the whole point about Puppet is compiling a per-system resource catalog. So we've got this list of resources. And stop for a second, talk about terminology. One of the things that took me a long time to get, I guess I'll say right. I don't know if it's right now, but it's much better, is terminology. We didn't start using the term resource until a little over a year ago. I was calling them all kinds of weird things before that. And until we got the term resource and kind of everyone settled on that as a good term, it was very difficult to talk about this. We recently just started using the term catalog to describe the collection of resources associated with a specific host. It's a relatively arbitrary term, but once you decide on it, you kind of have to stick with it because otherwise things get really confusing. I was calling them configurations for a long time, but how many times have I already used the word configuration? It tends to get really repetitive and thus confusing. So the whole point about Puppet is, for every host in your network, there's some set of resources you're managing on that host. You want to figure out, what resources are we managing, how are they related, and what resource classes is the given host a member of? Am I a mail server? What resources come with being a mail server? Am I a mail client? What resources come with that? Am I a Debian server? Am I in this data center? Am I in New York? All these things have resources associated with them. They might have default routes. They might have network configurations. They might have different DNS lookups or different DNS resolvers. They might have, if you're a production server versus a test server, you're going to use a completely different set of configurations. If you're in production, then the changes are going to go much more slowly, as the Debian guys know. If you're in test, then you're going to iterate much faster. And as a result, the set of resources is going to be very different. So if you look at what it takes to turn our canonical procedural process into resources. Does that work? It doesn't work. All right. It's just very slow. So we first figure out what resource types are we talking about. Well, we've got a package, a file, and a service. What resource instances are we talking about? So I went to dinner with some guys, some sysadmins the other day, and they said, oh, you can't use the word instance. Sysadmins don't know about instances. They can't handle object-oriented programming. And I called them crazy. So, resource instances. And then, once you've figured out what resources you're talking about, what do you care about those resources? What do those resources look like? And packages are usually pretty easy. Either you've got them installed or you don't want them installed. So it's pretty much, they should be there or they should be gone. Files, there's actually a lot of things you can manage about files. This is a simplified example, so I'm just saying basically, this file should be copied from that location. Make sure that whatever file I have on the server is always copied to this machine. So every machine in your network is always going to have the most recent available SSHD config. You have a question?
Yeah.
I can repeat the question too. That's right.
Just to interrupt and probably get an example, how would I cater for a situation where my SSH config calls for passwords being permitted on those two dev boxes, but nowhere else? But otherwise, it's standard.
So there are a number of ways to handle that, because it wouldn't be a good system if you didn't have multiple choices. But what people usually do for that is they'll have a template. So Puppet has built-in support for templating, so you can say, instead of using a static file, then you can have a template that behaves differently depending on the platform. Or you can have multiple configuration files, and in this situation, use that configuration file, and in that situation, use a different configuration file. Those are the two most common forms. The one thing that I'm relatively strict on in terms of what I recommend, which no one seems to do, because, again, they get to do what they want. They don't have to listen to me. I like having all my configuration information in one place. One of the downsides of using templates is that you tend to have a lot of logic in your templates. If this, then that, then the other stuff. And that tends to make it really confusing, because you look at it and you go, oh, it's just a template. It's just filling in some variables. And if you have a lot of logic there, then it's confusing. So I prefer to have something here that says, if there isn't a big difference between the two configuration files, then you just say, in this case, use that config, otherwise use this other config. I don't think I have any examples of templates in here. I started out, theoretically, I do go into code a little bit more detail later on, but I was supposed to go into a lot more detail on the code in this talk, but based on some experiences with clients last week, I realized 3 days into the consulting engagement that they still didn't quite grok the whole resource and what I was talking about when I was talking about resources. So I'm spending a bit more time going into more detail in this case, and I hope that it's helping and you're not upset that you don't see quite as much code. So I hope that answers the question.
Directly the next question. How do you manage the naming scheme of packages and services inside Puppet itself? Because you said you have this for different distribution, like Red Hat, Debian, whatever, and now the package is called OpenSSH Server for Debian, and the package inside Puppet is called SSH. How this?
For the record, that isn't a plant question, but. So again, the resources, to me, it's the same resource. It's the SSH package. It's the SSH server. I want to think about it as the same thing. So Puppet gives you the ability to give resources multiple names. You've got what I consider to be the human name, which is what I call the title of the resource, and then the computer name, which I confusingly call the name. And you can give every resource in Puppet, and this is part of the language syntax. You can give every resource as many names as you want. In this case, here's an example of saying, Darwin stores the SSHD config file in one place, everyone else stores it somewhere else, which of course is not true, but again, this is a simplified example. So I just say, look, wherever the heck the SSH config file is stored, figure it out, and I want to call that thing SSHD config from now on. I give it that alias, and you can see, I then can use that name in when I'm specifying relationships to that resource from then on. Both names work. I can use either name if I want to, but having that alias means that in one place I store the logic for translating the human name, the thing that I want to call it, to whatever computer name is necessary for that platform. And then it's available from then on out. And that, again, is obviously important. So he's saying that first I have to know the differences. And this is something that today, in the same way that, like I said, when we first had high-level languages available, first you create the language, and then the content becomes available. Puppet today it's a tool, it's got a language, there is not very much content available. Hopefully, you'll be able to download that solution in 2 years. You'll be able to go and say, look, just manage SSH for me, and somebody else will have solved that problem, in the same way that you can download a lot of other code today. We're working on making that easier, but as it stands right now, we provide you the ability to solve that problem much more easily than you otherwise could. Hopefully you'll publish your solution and then somebody else won't have to solve the problem. We're working on making it so you don't even have to solve the problem. I really do want to get to the point where you can apt-get install, be a kick-ass workstation, and then never have to worry about it again. But we're not quite there yet. So once you've got your resources, you want to be able to specify the relationships of these resources. And so here's the same kind of thing. This stuff ends up mattering a lot. Puppet uses these resources, or these relationships, at the very heart of the system. When when I take the entire resource catalog for a given host and I try to figure out what I need to do on that host. So the resource catalog itself says, here are all the things that I care about. But again, the relationships themselves matter. We have to go in a specific order. If A depends on B, then B has to get done first. So what Puppet does is it builds builds what we call a resource graph. It has a graph of all these resources and their relationships between each other. And then it does a topological sort so that we know all dependencies go before their dependent resources. And this allows us to provide some guarantees, like your package will get installed before you try to start the service. And it ends up mattering a lot. So once you know, again, we know what we're managing, we know how they relate to each other, and now we put these things in what we call classes to say, look, when I say the SSH, when I say this is an SSH server, I mean it's got all these resources related in this way. When I say this is a mail client, it's got all these resources related in this way. When I say it's any of these things, here all, you know, this is an example of a small configuration for my network. Here are the nodes that I care about. Here are the classes that they're in. And that's, you've essentially walked through the entire configuration process now. What resources do I care about? How are they related to each other? What do I call that set of resources? And who is a member of, who's using that set of resources? And that's the process that you go through for everything you do in over the course of using Puppet. And really, you're doing that whether you know it or not. If you're using, you know, if you're bash scripting your way to sysadmin hell, you're still doing this. You just don't know that you're doing it. You're not talking about it at this level. You're not speaking at the high level, but you're still solving all these problems. Okay. So you've got this resource catalog now. You know all the resources that you want to manage on this system. What are you going to do with them? So Puppet's configuration process is, first we have to retrieve the resource catalog. Every host, like I said, does this by default every half an hour. You can tune this timing, this interval. Once you've got the resource catalog, you do this topological sort, and then you take each resource in turn, and the way that I think about it is you ask each resource, are you correctly configured? And if it's not configured correctly, then you sync that resource. So you pretty much end up with this big list, and you say, are you right, are you right, are you right? And for everyone that says, well, I know I'm not right, then you change it. And for every change that happens, if somebody is, internally I use events to signify change. If some of the resources subscribe to those events, if I'm a service and my configuration has changed, I want to know. So I pay attention, I subscribe to events from that resource, and then I can restart that service when necessary. Today, configuration retrieval is done, and all other network access is done over XMLRPC, over HTTPS. I'm moving to REST because it's going to be much cleaner and simpler to manage and understand, and hopefully it'll be easier to write other applications that use Puppet's APIs. Puppet has its own certificate authority. The question is, what's REST? REST, I believe, stands for Representational State Transfer. It's one of those acronyms that doesn't actually mean anything, like most of them, I believe. So the idea with REST is that it's a very HTTP-centric API. So you're using like the HTTP verbs to interact with objects. So instead of doing like, you would do catalog.git instead of whatever the heck crappy API I have right now. So it ends up being, you don't have to make a lot of complicated decisions about your API because you just kind of have to stick with whatever HTTP gives you, which in some ways is restricting, but it also ends up being a much nicer design. So when I first wrote Puppet, there wasn't much in the way of certificate authority, and 4 years later, strangely, there isn't much in the way of a good certificate authority. I expect everyone is still using ca.pl or whatever it is. So I wrote a very simple but apparently sufficient certificate authority that allows you to generate certificate requests, sign certificate requests, and that's pretty much it. You can revoke certificates also. And the only connection in a Puppet network that's ever, all connections are encrypted, the only connection that's not authenticated is the first connection that says, I would like this certificate request signed. If you don't want that to be unauthenticated, you can manually generate the certificates using Puppet certificate authority and copy the certificates down, and you will never have an unauthenticated connection over the life of your use of Puppet. If you don't want to use Puppet certificate authority and you already have one, a certificate is a certificate. Generate your certificates however you want, put them in place, you're good to go. We've already talked about that. So, like I said earlier, you basically, for every resource in our resource catalog, retrieve the current state. And retrieving the current state, it's not like Puppet has this concept of state. Puppet asks dpackage, is this package installed? Puppet asks the password database, is this user in place? Puppet asks etc/init.d, is this service running? It doesn't have any magical knowledge of these things. It's an interface to whatever your local platform uses. And if there are any discrepancies, fix them. So here's a really simple example of a transaction. So we've got a very simple, make sure this file has this content in this mode. So
I was just curious about fixing it. What if you're actually in the middle of working on something and then this cron job kicks in and wipes out what you're working on?
Right.
No, you're actually trying to solve the problem before you put it into the repository.
Yeah, so...
So just take it out of the loop while you're working on it.
Essentially, that's like asking, what if I'm directly editing the code on the deployed web server and the cron job that deploys the code replaces my code? The answer is, why do you have a job? No, Right, so, and this does come up a lot, right? Something is broken, we need to make it work today. And then once we figure out what the solution is, or not today, but immediately, once we figure out the solution is, then you integrate that solution into the code, and then that gets deployed to all the rest of the machines. Firefighting, if you're firefighting, essentially, the best solution is to stop PuppetD or to lock PuppetD so that it doesn't run. And that's, in the future, as things get better, as the product matures, hopefully we'll be better about making it easy to firefight while you do things. But as it stands now, the best thing is lock PuppetD or stop it. Make your changes, integrate those changes into the repository, and then let them deploy back out. Another question?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of unmanaged servers that haven't seen Puppet, let alone Ruby. Is there any way I can derive a catalog from what I've currently got installed so then I can go about building a policy to baseline from?
The short answer is it's possible, but it's painfully difficult. I believe people are still attempting to write assembly to C converters and assembly and COBOL to C converters. And it, you know, yes, you can write something that kind of works a little bit, but the truth is it will never quite be what you want, and it will probably break more systems than it saves.
I'm talking about doing some discovery in an existing environment so I can actually bring this thing in. So
and you kind of can. There are no tools available that will make that easy for you. I think at some point people will write those tools. This API allows you to query things like what services are running right now, what users are set right now, what packages are set. You can run those queries right now. That executable I showed you earlier, Ralph, resource abstraction layer shell. You can use that to list all the installed packages, all the users. You can't use it to list all the files because that would be kind of painful. But so you can do that right now, but why are those resources there? Do you actually want those resources there? How are the resources related to each other? All that information, I can't extract that because that intent, unfortunately, is not stored anywhere on the machine. So what I would say is no. And I'd like to support it, but I don't think it's reasonable.
What about the model where you're looking after the base configuration of a lot of clients, but those clients are owned by many different people, and some people want to override some of your policy decisions, and you're okay for them to override those policy decisions? Does Puppet have a nice way of doing that?
Yeah, so it depends what you mean. If you mean you would like them to be able to override your decisions within the Puppet code...
Yeah, so say, for example, they have an xconfig that they... happy with, they want to go and use maybe the next version or the alpha version just for that specific xconfig, but they're happy with you to manage SSHD and everything else. Is there an easy way for you to just, for the person who owns a client to just override certain sections of what Puppet manages?
Yes, to the extent that there's any way to easily set up different rights within a version control repository. This is all code, it's all version controlled. If you trust this person has access to modify this file and not that file, then yes. Puppet does not have its own authentication or authorization system with respect to the version control repository it's using, so it has to rely on whatever you can do with that, and I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. But yes, if you subclass, if you've got your X11 client class and you subclass that and say this guy wants to override it with that file, that's pretty straightforward. And you can even set it up so that if they just copy the file in, Puppet will automatically use it if they want to override that file. So yeah, that's pretty straightforward. And there are lots of people doing that right now. Crowdsurfing microphones.
You said you've got 23 different package formats. Does that incorporate things like CPAN, GEMS, PEAR?
Yes.
Meta packages.
Right now we have GEM support. Somebody has written CPAN support. but it does not work, so I haven't committed it to the repository. If you look at the support for those, you'll see it's essentially, what command do I need to install packages? What command do I need to uninstall packages? What command do I need to, things like that. Yeah, and if you go to the type reference and look at the package, the reference for the package format, you'll see all the different package providers I have and all the features they have. And you'll see that OS X's package type is the crappiest of all in that it has the ability to install and nothing else. And other things can do crazy stuff like uninstall packages. It's insane. So let me just make sure there aren't any other slides that I want to, because we're basically at the question phase. So one of the important things about Puppet's configurations is that they're idempotent configurations. Not impotent, but that you can run the configurations lots and lots of times, and if everything is already configured correctly, then it won't do anything at all. It'll just say, oh, we're good, we're done, I just wasted my time. So I think we're to the question phase. It's all written in Ruby, lots of test code. If you want to know why I wrote it, yeah, so it's in use in production around the world right now. We're almost at the question phase, I just want to get a little more done. At least two sites are managing more than 6,000 hosts of it today. So its version number is 23 or 24.1, but I'm just not ready to call it 1.0, but it's definitely production quality. I do service and support, I do consulting, I do custom development. I do make my living on Puppet, and I have been for 2 years, so now we're to the full questions phase. All right, who has the microphone right now?
The providers, is that its own language or is that Ruby as well?
That's all Ruby. Yeah, Puppet language or Ruby. I think he's...
You mentioned it was a pull. Is there a way for a server to suck files off the client for auditing and reporting?
You can set it up so that that is possible. There's no automatic way for that to happen. Like I said, you can use the same querying system that I showed you earlier with Roush that can pull any resources you want from a system. After every Puppet transaction, you can configure Puppet clients. They send a report to the server saying, this is what changed, this is how many resources I'm managing, some basic metrics and all the log messages that were generated during that transaction. So you do get reporting with the system, but anything else is manual coding on your part.
So you talk about resource abstractions, and then half of me smiles and the other half frowns. It smiles because you're allowing me to put certain policy decisions into a central piece of code, and it frowns because there are certain things that I may have to do different. Two examples, like dead packages can be removed or purged. I don't know if that's possible for RPM. On the other hand, like, you might want to restart SSHD, you might want to reload Apache. Now in your configuration, I didn't see that. It only said like subscribe to, so what can you actually, how far down can you take influence into what's happening on an instance basis?
Right. So right now, you do have control over the difference between uninstall and purge. And for things that don't support purging, then we just go, we'll consider uninstall to be the same as purge. The difference between reloading and refreshing, restarting, we don't have the ability to tune that right now. It wouldn't take a lot of effort to make that, but it definitely comes up. And generally speaking, I'm a squeaky wheel developer. If nobody complains and it doesn't get done. I think last week is the first time that somebody finally said, look, I actually want to reload instead of restart. So it hadn't come up before that. Now that people are asking about it, it'll probably get done relatively soon. It does come up, and one of the, like with any abstraction, you have to pick how leaky do you want your abstraction? How much information do you want to expose about the low-level system? Every abstraction is somewhat leaky. So far we've been pretty successful at keeping it pretty tight, but if you look at packages especially, you've got some package types that can only install and can't do anything else, and you've got other types that you can specify individual versions, and they'll automatically upgrade, and it gets pretty complicated. So there's some leakiness there, but hopefully it seems to be worth it for people overall. So, and that's about the best I can say. Who has the microphone now?
Hi. Yeah, if you're using services that are rapidly evolving, like Nginx, or a couple of years ago Apache with the mod proxy balancer, and they're not in the distributions that you're deploying to, what's your solution for compiling up on the different platforms?
I personally don't recommend deploying compiled code anywhere except in the form of a package. So even if you have to compile it yourself, then I highly, highly, highly recommend you package it and then distribute that as a package. Any decent packaging system like, you know, Debian will make it easy to make your own package, your own app repository, stick your packages in there, sign them yourself, and you can deploy those as much as you want. It's very straightforward compared to, oh crap, it's Friday night, why won't Apache start, or how did this thing get to be the wrong version? It's very much about, do I want to spend some time now, or do I want to spend some time at, you know, midnight on a Saturday? it's an easy choice for me. So it is more time, it is more effort, but Puppet saved you so much time, you have that time available, right?
I'm just wondering about scaling it up for that. Those installs of 6,000 hosts, when you get up to that sort of size, how hard is the Puppet Master working? Do you need, you know, a really beefy Puppet Master machine, or?
I don't think so. One of those two sites I know almost nothing about, and I just found out about it this past week. So all I know about it is that number. The other site, the guy who's using it, it's actually at Google, he keeps telling me, oh, we have a very, very simple configuration. And the complexity of the configuration definitely affects compile time and thus scaling time. It's all HTTPS. There is no state on the system other than the certificate authority, and even then it's just the serial file that can't be horizontally scaled. At 6,000 hosts, I would expect your machine is working pretty hard because you've got a couple of machines contacting your server every second. I believe he was running 8 Mongrel instances behind Pound and was thinking maybe when he goes to 8 or 10,000, he was going to have to go to a second server. I consider that to be a pretty reasonable scaling rate. I just went through the lecture this week using dtrace and cut the lexing time by like 70%. So I haven't done a lot of optimization. I expected somebody said, you know, Luke, I really want this to be faster. I want it so much to be faster, I'm willing to provide money in exchange for speed. Puppet would get faster even. I have not spent much time optimizing because, again, I'm a squeaky wheel developer. Some things are slow, some things really suck. Some things only kind of suck. I try to work on the things that really suck first and then the things that people pay me to care about afterwards.
Have you thought about or implemented conflict resolution some sort?
So Puppet refuses to let a given resource appear twice in the same resource catalog. If you have, is that your question?
Actually, I was thinking about the case of, oops, I edited my SSHD config over on this machine that's being managed. If you could keep the old, source control, right?
Right.
So actually, I do want this, but Puppet detects the conflict and lets you...
Right. So Puppet does detect the conflict and considers it to be damage and replaces the file.
So I want conflict resolution.
So how much are you willing to pay for it? So what Puppet does... what Puppet does is it will... it has what I call a file bucket, which is basically you can have a per-client file bucket, or you can configure all your Puppet clients to store the files that it replaces on a central server by MD5, which again is what you're saying is horrible. But so I can basically say, look, if this file changes before you replace it, make a backup somewhere. And that way, if you do need a copy, then it's available. It logs the MD5, some what it was, what it is now, and then at least you can track it down and store it if you want. That's the best I can get at this point. No one's spent a lot of time on that so far.
I guess it's similar, but I guess in large sites, you're going to have, some variation. I mean, it's pretty hard. Now, obviously, using Puppet's going to help that, but exception handling, like if an event happens where, like, you haven't thought of in terms of the way you set up your dependencies, I mean, how does it handle that? Does it always put it back into a known working state, or what?
Puppet does not currently... When an exception is encountered in the resource catalog, it basically cuts off that portion of the resource graph. It says everything below that node, that failed resource, we're going to skip because we got a failure. But it continues on with the rest of the resource catalog. There, in the plumbing, I've got the work done necessary to do things like rollbacks. But as with so many things, everyone asks me about rollbacks. Everyone says, I really want rollbacks. And I go, how badly do you want rollbacks? And they go, badly enough to ask you for it. And until someone wants it more badly than that, it's only going to be in the plumbing. All the work is done, or nearly all the work is done. It's just, how are you going to configure it? How are you going to control how it happens? Where are we going to store the transaction logs? How are we going to store them? Are you okay having that dependency? What happens if we lose the transaction log? How do you want to behave? All this stuff takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot more people available than just me. I'm still doing like about 99% of the development, and I'm working very hard at growing the company, so I'm not the only person doing that, and growing the community, getting other people involved. If anybody wants to help code, there's lots of work to do. You can make a very big impact right away, I promise you. So, yeah, it's one of those things that I'm conscious of it. I want it to happen, but it's not quite there right now. All right, I have a lot of cards on the desk if anybody's interested, and feel free to track me down in the next few hours. So, enjoy. started out poorly, but I seem to get it under control. We'll open that in a minute.